Welcome to Your Weekly Dose podcast, the only show for those who missed the Mark and Brian radio program. Coming to you from Orange County in Southern California. Hear it happen live without a net every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Download past episodes directly from our website, yourweeklydose.com. But if you're on the go, subscribe through iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and make sure you leave a review. Now, here's this week's show.
Fingers up and down my spine.
Scary!
Same old witchcraft when your eyes meet mine.
Cross-eyed!
Same old tingle that I feel inside. And then that elevator starts its ride.
At first, I thought you were saying kooky.
I was.
Kooky.
Kooky.
Lend me your comb. 77 like Sunset Strip.
All right. Well, good morning, everybody. Happy Saturday to all of you. We got a full house today. Yes, indeed. Steve Silva's here.
Yes, he is.
Amber Ashby Carey's here.
I'm back.
Producer Zach is here.
How are you?
And, of course, intern Christopher is out there also.
Hi.
And I am Sean Roberts, your host, and together we are Your Weekly Dose Podcast. And of course, as always, we are streaming to you live from Orange County, California, every Saturday morning. And once again, hello, Delmarva Radio.
Good old Delmarva Radio out there. It's a cold day out there, by the way.
It's a cold day out here,
too.
Give us the weather.
The high out in that area is 55. That's 5-5.
It's a crisp fall day.
Whoa, that's lower than our low at night.
Well, we had fog this morning here.
We did.
Oh, we had, in Long Beach, it's been pretty intense.
Yeah, it was very dense here as well.
Anyway, good morning, and thank you for joining us today as we pay homage to our favorite radio gods, Mark and Brian. If you miss them as much as we do, you tuned in to the right podcast because we are the only ones who continue their radio traditions.
Yes, you guys. And for those who recently followed us, thank you guys for joining the family. Thank you. I got a little signal there. We are so glad you guys listen. It took my brain like 2 seconds
to figure out the dash.
I don't know if you were saying put down your fucking phone or if you were
turn off your fucking phone.
There you go.
Thank you, Linda.
So yeah, you guys, we're so happy you listen, and we got some things going on with the still got the contest going a little bit.
Yes, absolutely, we do. We still got that going on, guys. We're going to be continuing that probably up until about Thanksgiving or so is
awesome.
When we're going to do it. So keep doing those things. We see the numbers keep going up.
$100!
Not only that, but I have an announcement to make.
Please.
We now officially have over 1,000 followers on Facebook. So just want to say thank you to all of you who believe in us and understand who we are and what we do. Thank you so much, guys.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. We got a great show for you guys today. We're going to be doing the top 5 Halloween movies with Paul Preston, our buddy. We got some Halloween tweets. Of course, we just got the news this morning, the passing of the great Sir Sean Connery. Also, would you buy this haunted house? The top 10 Halloween songs, podcast for Halloween lovers.
All right.
And, of course, states that have what is the most common fear in each state. And then, of course, at the end of the show, we will broadcast and replay the Mark and Brian induction into the Radio Hall of Fame if you missed it.
Oh, boy.
Hey, well, now, don't forget, you can interact with the show commenting on our website, yourweeklydose.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1. Find us on Facebook or email us at yourweeklydose1@gmail.com.
That's right, Steve. Steve Silva. And not only can you download the show for free from our website, but you can also subscribe through iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify. It's super important, you guys. If you're listening right now and you haven't done it yet, iTunes and iHeartRadio, go on there, click subscribe, leave us a comment, do all the things. And just search for Your Weekly Dose, And most importantly, you guys, rate and review the show.
Very important, guys, especially if you want to be part of the contest and win $100 from Amazon. So you got to do all of those things. Of course, if you're not too sure exactly what to do, go to our Facebook page, Your Weekly Dose. And at the very top, we pinned it what exactly the instructions are to do there. There's 8 different ways you have a chance of winning $100. So don't forget to do that.
We made fun videos, too.
Absolutely. Of course, today's theme song was Witchcraft by the great Frank Sinatra. Real quick, round robin. Favorite Frank Sinatra song?
When I was 17.
Oh, it was,
it
very
was a very good year.
Well, I don't know if it's his. He wrote it originally, but I like Sin in the Clowns. His version of Sin in the Clowns.
That actually was good.
Yeah.
Zach?
He did My Way, right?
Yeah, yes. That's one of my other. I was going to say My Way.
The
too.
Reason I know that's him, or almost didn't for a second, was because of Sid Vicious.
Oh, okay.
And I. Have you ever seen Sid and Nancy, when Gary Oldman plays Sid Vicious, he pretty much reenacts that entire song, like the video for it and everything.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Christopher?
I would say also My Way.
My Way?
Yeah.
Cool. Ha. I think one of mine, it's not a big hit of his or whatever, but if you go on YouTube and you look up Frank Sinatra and Elvis singing together.
Oh.
They did each other's songs.
They did each other's.
Cool.
They did each other's songs. Notice I finished the sentence.
I just wanted to be back.
They did each other's what?
Songs.
Oh, songs. Okay. There's no L in that.
I didn't say sax.
Or schlongs.
Or slongs.
Can you imagine those two trying? Never mind.
No.
What grade are we in?
Too angry. Yeah. Too angry.
But it's really, really cool because Frank Sinatra did something very smart. It was at a point in his career where he was not necessarily coming down per se, but he knew that Elvis was kind of taking over. Mm-hmm. And when Elvis came back from the army, he welcomed him back and did a TV special for Elvis. And that's where that came from. So it's a great, great moment in with Frank and I think passing the torch, so to speak, to the next generation.
He was good about that.
And if you want to get any of his music, of course, where's the best place to go?
Amazon!
You guys are good on that, too. Awesome. Just go to our website, yourweeklydose.com, click on the Amazon banner, bookmark it, and then shop to your heart's delight, including music, anything you need, you know, everything from towels to hats to costumes, of course, you know, but hey, you might get a good costume because it's a little bit late, but you might not get it till tomorrow, but that's your fault.
Better late than never.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, either way, use our Amazon banner. It helps us stay on the air. And good Lord.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, God. We've been on. Baby. Can you believe it, Steve? In February. Yep. It'll be 4 years.
Four?
What?
Wow. No.
Starting year 5.
Wow.
It'll be 4 years we've been
crazy
on the air, dude.
That's huge.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Completely unexpected.
Yeah, I know.
Who would have thought?
I did not think.
No, I know that for a fact. Yeah, absolutely.
That's apparent every week.
Yeah. Well, real quick, guys, to try to keep the show on schedule, let's go ahead and catch up with each other. I so missed that last week.
Can't help it. It sticks in my friggin' head.
Well, Amber, let's start with you because you weren't here last week. How was your week?
Yeah, so, okay, my Miles was a little sicky poos, but we're all good. Just a little bug.
Now, you were really panicking there for a while, too.
Well, it's just with COVID, man,
I know. You sneeze and 80 people freak out, so.
Yeah, and then, you know, and the kid has a little bit of a fever and body aches and.
You wonder.
And the tummy and there was no coughing and. But it's hard with kids because, you know, I mean, even teenagers are like, I'm like, did your throat hurt? I think.
Where's my throat?
Yeah, I mean, I would say kids and grown men have a lot in common. Like, I think I got
Excuse me?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think so.
Tell me about when men get sick. Tell me.
I take care of myself. Thank you very much.
You're not like,
No.
You're not grumpy?
No.
I don't really get sick like flu.
So It's been a long time since I've gotten the flu. Yeah. At least 20 years since I've gotten the flu.
Man. Well, let's hope that that continues on. So, yeah, just that.
Because I wash my hands. That's why.
Good. Wash your hands. Wash your mouth with some soaps.
I use Scope and Listerine.
So besides the kid being sick and getting better, it was a little bug, and everything's been good. I'm not going to be here for a bit. I am shooting a pilot sizzle in Atlanta and Nashville. Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm just kidding. So I have
trying to do Audrey Hepburn there or something?
Something, Audrey.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tinseltown. Breaking news! Amirash McCarry finally landed a role. Thank God. Now she's out of our hair.
So, yeah, we're flying out to Nashville and Atlanta. It's true. I'll be out of your hair for a little bit. While I'm quarantined.
Well, you know
I'll be remote. I'm only going to miss 1 week.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yes. I'm
going to
miss...
That's
oh,
it?
Shut up. I'm only going to miss one Saturday, one show, but I'll be remote the two that bookend it. So I'll be remote next week, and then I won't be here that we'll be filming. And then.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get to see a lot of my friends and family very safely.
Well, either way, we're very happy for you, of course.
Thank you. And, I'm so excited.
I'm very excited for you.
This is a big deal. When you're in
Atlanta, you need to stop by and see our friend Cress Williams, who plays Black Lightning, because that's where they film Black Lightning, is in Atlanta.
Really?
Yeah.
Then you can go up to North Carolina and drop in on Mark.
Wow, yeah. You're really making this complicated on me, guys. It's COVID times, so we got to be careful here.
That's okay. Mark and Linda are quarantined, so you're okay.
I'm literally traveling. I tell you. So,
turn off your fucking phone.
Thank you, Linda.
Steve, she's talking to you. So,
that phone is off.
I'm traveling with, I have medical grade goggles that seal my face. I got a ton of they're like a knockoff N95 mask. They're called a KN95. I don't know. I was trying to research all this stuff today. Okay. But these masks
that means kinda.
Yeah, kinda.
Kinda.
It's kind of like a 95. Not really. It's more like a 94 and a half.
Yeah. So just the masks and the face shield and very careful flying. And
I can't imagine now getting on a plane with her, which we were going to do.
I'm freaking out.
You know what?
I'm really nervous.
My mom was talking to a friend of hers or whatever, and she did a quick flight. I forgot from where to where.
Oh, God, please.
Five people on the plane.
Had it?
No.
Oh, on the whole plane.
On the whole plane.
Oh, my God. I was like, oh, my God.
No, five people were on the plane.
Okay.
That was it. So I don't think you really have a lot to worry
about. Know, I've had a couple friends who've flown, and they just say, just wear your mask the entire time.
Yeah.
Do not take the damn mask off. Don't eat any food on the plane.
Oh, I never eat any plane food. Unless it's like nuts and pretzels or something.
And my friend Heather with her three little girls, like they brought all their own snacks.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Don't touch anything.
Don't
look at anybody in the eyes. You'll catch it.
Yeah.
Don't sit all the way down on the seat.
Yeah. Don't do anything. Like don't do anything.
Hold yourself up, you know.
5 hours of this.
Sit in the back because the mountains are up front. Yeah. You know.
So it's going to be exciting, and I get to see my sister. I get to see all my whole family. I'm so excited.
Oh, that's cool.
I haven't seen them in 3 years.
Steve, how was your week, bud?
Well, it started out great on Sunday night. Got to go see you play the drums.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Ah, that was awesome. That was a lot of fun. There's an open mic over there in, I guess it's
Brea.
Yeah, just across the freeway from Anaheim Hills. Ha! Had to get that in.
Long freeway.
No, it was a lot of fun. Some talented people go there. Some people that can really play their instruments well. We even had a girl named Emily that played the accordion, and she was really good. It was surprising. So yeah, it was fun. And then it was great at the end when a Latino band got up.
Latinx.
On the thing, and
Latinx.
The main singer had to turn around and teach Sean the drum sequence.
I'm a rock drummer, you know, kind of thing. And I play the drums. I'm not a drummer. There's a difference.
Yes.
You know, and I know that.
You have the ability to play the drums.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So, you know, we're there and everything, and we had a blast, you know, and I think from the time it started till it ended, I mean, I was on the throne for 4 hours straight.
Yeah.
The toilet?
Yeah. Yeah. And then he came out and played drums after that.
Yeah. So
well, it's Mexican food there. So.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's like, because, you know, some people, you ask them, do you want me to back you up, you know, with a beat or anything like that? And everybody said,
yeah.
Yeah, please back me up. I'm like, well, okay.
It was a lot of fun.
And just listen to what they're singing and just kind of create a rhythm behind them or whatever, what have you. But when the Mexican band came up, I'm just like,
oh boy.
I've never played Latino music. I mean, they're going, okay, we need you to play the cumbia.
La who?
Cumbia. Yeah, that's what I'm doing, going, huh? And I'm just
cumbia?
Like
Colombia, no, cumbia.
Cumbia.
What's cumbia?
Cumbia music. It's a
Latin style.
Latin style.
Latin style.
Oh, I looked this up.
Know, oh, then we do a we need to do a merengue.
Oh like, yeah.
I don't know what the hell.
You're a bad, bad Hispanic man.
And
okay, and then, well, and not then, knowing how to do it, and then doing it, what happened?
I got pretty good.
Did you?
That was my audition.
Oh, my gosh. Are you there?
They actually asked me to be. They go, hey, can you come in on Wednesday and practice with us?
Oh, shit.
We need a drummer.
You going to do it?
I'm like, I think that. I'm really seriously thinking about it.
I think you should.
It'd probably be so much fun.
I know. I want to go.
Well, here's the thing. My unemployment is about to run out.
Uh-oh.
I've got, like, I think less than 1,000 in right now. So it's going to run out real quick. So it's like. And they're going, oh, yeah, we played, like, a quinceañeras and stuff like that. I'm like, well, that's an awful lot of money there.
Yeah.
Yes. Count me in. So I told them, give me a couple of weeks. Let me kind of get some of the rhythms down
a
little bit so I can kind of get used to it. Because I was sitting behind the throne going, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, and trying to keep the rhythm there.
Yeah.
You know, and then while trying to also listen to what they're playing and try to keep it.
Yeah,
in that
right
without
in there.
Going too crazy.
In the pocket.
Yes, and that's all I was just trying to stay in the pocket.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to try and take some quick drum lessons from a couple of friends, too.
Nice.
And see if, you know, just to get
them
down.
I'm going to have to come spy. I've been like, kind of messing with my drums and my figuring out all my stuff a lot more.
Steve and I are now going to go down every Sunday. I'm going to call the
what?
Guy and go, and hey, do you need me to drum or do you need me to do this? Do you need me to do that? And then just sit in. And sitting with the drums was a blast.
Oh,
because
I
it's the most improvisational thing.
I can't wait to get back
thing.
And come watch you.
Oh, it was so fun.
Oh.
It was so
give
fun.
Give me a month. Give me a month.
Yeah, it was fun. So, but what else was, we, and, oh, then you came over and watched the Dodger game.
Oh, that's right.
We watched the Dodgers
win
the World Series.
Watched it, yeah, after I was over here for the Lakers winning the NBA championship,
now?
I came over here this week and watched the Dodgers win the
Tuesday.
Major League Baseball championship. So,
that was a great
World
game.
World Series.
That was a good game.
It
the game before
game.
That was just, that was a tearjerker at the end. They didn't win. Uh-huh.
Well, 2 days before,
They
effed it up. And,
Mookie!
That closer. I hate that closer because he loses it every effing time.
What's the pitcher, the Gonzalez?
He did great.
He did amazing,
He did absolutely great.
And then Justin Roberts got the COVID and they pulled him off. Beginning of the game.
Justin Turner.
Justin Turner.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then he came back out on the field and was celebrating
with
the team.
Afterwards.
With his mask off. He was kissing his wife and hugging people. It was kind of funny because at first they thought he wasn't anywhere around, but then other people had video. Oh, no, there he is right there.
Yeah.
he was out there celebrating. Up, right?
I'm like, you know what? I'd probably do the same thing.
Yeah. It's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. No. So
we got the Lakers. We got the Dodgers. Now, how are our Rams going to do?
Are they still in St. Louis?
Your
think voice got real high all of a sudden.
I know, I got angry.
There's some really good teams that are doing better than the Rams.
Oh, no, yeah. Rams.
Right now, so they are going to have to come back.
Well, they did beat the Chicago Bears.
The Bears.
Yeah. Sorry, Brian, but yeah.
Yeah.
Well, tomorrow they're playing the Dolphins.
Oh! Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know. That would be awesome.
I prefer the Rams over the Chargers. I think.
Yeah. I always have to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I grew up in L.A. So
no.
I went to the Coliseum and actually watched the Dodgers play in the Coliseum.
Because Steve is that old.
Till they got their stadium built. And I also saw the Rams play in the Coliseum and everything. And then towards Joe Namath's end of his career last year, he played on the Rams. And I went to the Coliseum to watch Joe Namath because he's arguably my favorite player of all time in football.
Non-arguably, mine is Troy Aikman.
That's a good.
And I'm not going to argue about that. That's my favorite. Yeah.
So, it was a good week, fun week, and
no, we had a blast, man. We had a blast hanging out together.
It's a fun game. I sent you guys some pictures when I was drunk. I was like, woo!
Yeah,
of course.
I was cooking and watching the game and screaming.
Of course, at home it's kind of awkward because we don't have a kitchen.
Oh, that's right, because you're remodeling right
they've
now.
They've taken the whole... the kitchen looks like a racquetball court, except it's got a fridge and a metal table that's got a microwave on it.
Oh, my gosh.
So I've got to, like, you know, that I can't cook anything, and there's no water to wash any dishes or anything.
A lot of wiener schnitzel?
So, yeah. Yeah, wiener schnitzel and...
Paul's Place.
Chicken and...
Popeyes.
Yeah, so, but it's cool. I'm coping.
Those are all places walking distance.
And the last 2 days...
Rite Aid.
We didn't have any water in the bathroom because they were working on the whole house water. So it's been exciting this week.
You're camping.
Yeah. I've had like big 2-liter bottles of water. When we went to that first time you took me to remember, I bought those bottles of water, and I've been using those, and we have to go again because I'm into my last bottle of water.
Oh, geez.
So,
yeah.
Well, you know, guys, it is Halloween, and what better person to talk to on Halloween but our friend Paul Preston. Because Paul is now going to give us
Pablo,
the top 5 Halloween movies from Tinseltown. How you doing, Paul?
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. It's top 5 movies of the horror genre for Tinseltown. Appreciated that super Hollywood guy voice.
You like that, don't you?
It's still going. Keep going with it.
Isn't that good? Ladies and gentlemen, I can talk about all sorts of movies today. Carrie, The Fly, Get Out, The Evil Dead Movie, Scream, The Silence of the Lambs. There's so many great movies that are out there that you consider a horror film. But I've got 5 that I'm going to pick for my top 5.
Woo!
Number 5 is Little Women.
What? Too early to keep this up. Too early to keep it up. I can't do it.
Breathe, Paul. Breathe.
All right, Paul. So what you got for us, buddy?
Well, I think you said bring a top 10. I said, tell you what, I'll bring a top 5, and then you guys can all share with me because I'd like to hear your number ones at least.
Right.
But then I had a problem coming up with the top 5 because, I mean, I can't entirely – I'm kind of a product of my time. Like, my top 4 are all movies of my era.
Okay.
When I was a little older. But when I was a little younger is when some really great stuff came out. So I have a 3-way tie for number 5. Is that cheating? Have I cheated right out of the gate?
No.
Okay.
Sean, we'll allow it.
Sean's okay with 3-ways.
Yeah, I love 3-ways.
Hey, do it.
There you go. It's basically the 70s classics. It's the Halloween, The Exorcist, and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, yeah.
Because for me, Halloween is the best of the slasher movies. Your Jason's, your Freddy's, and all that. It was not just, you know, a slasher movie, but it's, you know, like all franchises, it goes crazy over time, but the original is a bit of a masterpiece. So even just the credits alone, from the pumpkin just getting closer and closer to the screen while the creepy John Carpenter music plays, I mean, that alone, I'm done. I'm like out of the beginning credits, and instead I have to sit there and watch more horror. You know, so that's up there. The Exorcist, of course, is like your thinking man's horror movie, real psychological terror. Ellen Burstyn's performance says daughter is possessed. She feels so helpless. Like, that's half the horror of the movie, if you ask me. Mm-hmm. And one of the first movies to really vitally bring the devil
right
up to the forefront, you know. So that movie is amazing. And the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is just uncomfortable as hell. Lot of chainsawing
so
people,
true.
But the vibe is so unsettling. It's like nothing really you'll ever see. So,
have you seen the commercial for Geico?
Yeah, that's a great commercial.
Yeah.
Why can't we just get in the car that's running?
Why don't we go hide behind the chainsaws?
And that guy, the slightest little, like, nod of his head and the
shaking
eye roll.
Like, oh, my God.
So funny.
Yeah, it's good.
But, if you know, people have tried to make a Texas Chainsaw remake and then sequels and then just other type of... But geez,
there's another one coming.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, well, you can't duplicate the low production value of the 70s movie. Anytime you add higher production of these things, it just doesn't resonate the same. It's too clean, you know?
Yeah, it makes it creepier that it's all old and...
It does, because it's just like a stamp in time.
It is.
So any one of those and your night is one. But here's my top 4 I stand by as these are just my favorites.
All right.
Number 4 is John Carpenter's The Thing.
Oh. Yeah.
Those if you don't know... Yeah, research scientists in Alaska come across this shape-shifting monster. So
Kurt Russell, baby.
Such a legend. Right?
Oh, God, so good
and
in that.
Like the heyday of Russell. I mean, unless you count like the Dexter Riley Disney movies. But the heyday was like those 80s Escape from New York. working with Carpenter, pretty much.
Yeah.
Big Trouble in Little China. So, so good, right?
Yeah.
But right away, you get the characters isolated, and that's creepy right out of the gate because they're in like Antarctica or wherever they are, or Alaska. Right. And then there's a monster on the loose, and it's shape-shifting, so you never know what you're going to get when you see it. But half the horror of that movie is really good thrills put together by the relationships, because the characters don't know if one of their own is the shape-shifting monster in disguise. So the mood is constantly tense. The exchanges are heated. And then what I love, and this doesn't happen enough, John Carpenter just delivers the goods with the thing.
Yeah.
You see it, it's huge and ugly and nasty and gross, and it's and that's there's no like quick flybys or what was that? It's like here's the thing, and it's
horrifying,
just ugly and horrifying. And I just thought that was great.
I mean, it looks worse than Roseanne Barr. I mean,
it's a cryptid, right? I mean, this, so it's supposed to be a cryptid, or whatever, like a shape shifting paranormal. Not like what the thing is.
Is that what they came up with? A cryptid?
They call them a cryptid. I think they call them a cryptid. Technically, is it an alien?
I thought it was an alien.
Yeah, I thought it was an alien.
I need to rewatch this one. Thank you, Paul, for this. I'm going to watch this one tonight.
Well, there you go. That's, rewatch it. You will not be disappointed. And for 82, the effects. And for 82, the effects were pretty impressive. You know, they were all practical. A lot of
And I got to say it again, but Kurt Russell's performance in that, man, just so good.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love Kurt.
Yeah. He didn't fool around. You know, he played it, and he played it tough guy, but it was never like a joke, and he was never, you know, all those other. I mean, eventually he ended up in some dorky stuff like
Tombstone,
Tango and Cash, you know, but but he started out just playing tough guy and playing it straight and raising the stakes and, you know, committing to the wacky premises of some of those movies. But I thought he was great.
Yeah. I mean, it's no Fast and the Furious, but it's awesome.
Number three for me, this is now, here's an example where after this first movie, eventually by the third, I saw less and less of the main character, whereas I loved seeing the thing. I'll explain in a second. Number three is Alien.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, Alien is a sci-fi movie, technically, yes, but that movie's frightening. And one of the best parts about it was, again, timing for me. The movie came out when I was 9. I didn't see it until it was on regular TV with commercials. Still scared the shit out of me. So that's testament funny to how good it is.
And what really sucked is when it was on TV, they didn't even show Sigourney Weaver's butt crack. So disappointing.
The shame of that.
Damn, so disappointing.
That's the highlight of the movie.
Yeah.
Really, that is. I regret not bringing that up right away. But so why don't you go to Nashville for 2 months?
But no, you're right, Paul. That is such a good movie, and just the way that whole thing was put together, it's kind of like Jaws. You didn't see it the shark for some time. Same thing with the alien. You didn't see it for quite some time. You know.
Well, then as that franchise went along, James Cameron really delivered the Alien. Like, yeah, the effects improved so much in 7 years. And by Alien 3, David Fincher was doing, like, Alien POV shots, and you didn't see enough Alien. I was like, I need me Alien, because Cameron spoiled me, you know?
Right.
And so Alien and The Thing, when they both just deliver up the monster in its, you know, full glory, that's very, very satisfying. And and there's a lot of quietness in Alien 2, which is good. You know, they say in space no one can hear you scream, and they take advantage of that silence. And then he'll turn right around and spring, like, long segments of just, like, hissing parts of the spaceship going with a you know, an alarm going, and you're just like, that gets unnerving, too. So you're like, good. Like, it's all kinds of terror built into that movie. It's
I feel amazing. Like I was right there right now.
Wow. Yeah. Hey, I have to say something about these movies, because it's me. In 1958, there was a movie called It, Terror from Beyond Space.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the movie the Alien is based on. And so that movie scared me really bad.
Yeah.
And then a little bit later, the original The Thing was campy but funny, and there were some kooky characters in that. But those were the things that I experienced when I was young. So when these movies started to come back again, like they made Alien and they made The Thing again, I was like, I don't know.
I've seen this before. Is it really going to be?
And I tell you, it was. They both were so much better than the originals. It was scary in that amount. But I really loved those movies when I was a kid. I was only 8 years old when I saw the original Alien.
Yeah.
Now, I have to ask Paul a question real quick. Paul?
Yep.
What do we think of the Alien, the prequels that came out, the newer ones with Michael Fassbender?
Funny you should mention him, because he's my favorite part of this. The whole David conundrum of being this robot,
yes,
and feeling like he wants to play God was fascinating. Unfortunately, a lot of the Alien thrills in them for me, I thought, were pretty rudimentary.
Yeah.
But I think overall they're worth watching for Fassbender.
I thought his
relationship with Guy Pearce, was a Ryland, uh-huh, right? Was really cool.
I really enjoy them.
Yeah.
I'll sit and watch the Prometheus over and over again. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this the for lack of a better word, the abortion scene in that movie. Talk about uncomfortable. Good God.
Okay, moving on.
Number the Alien abortion and expect any box office. So Prometheus sounded good. Let's call it that. Yeah.
All right, number two now.
Well, you just mentioned it. Now, again, here's one where it's alien sci-fi and horror. Well, maybe, but here's one that may not be horror, but to me, this movie achieved something no other movie has ever achieved, and that is Jaws.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't think I need to tell you it's about the great white shark that attacks people in Amity, but this is a movie that changed people's lives.
It did.
This continues to keep people out of the water for decades.
That's
no
because
movie
it can
has
happen.
That effect.
No,
yeah. No movie has that effect ever. It's a phenomenal achievement, and that makes it one of the greatest movies of all time. And I got to put at least number two on my list. Just, it's the most amazing movie ever made. People don't swim because of Jaws. A movie.
But if you do want to go to the Bahamas, don't take a plane, because a great white shark is the fastest way to get to the Bahamas, though.
Oh, my gosh.
Listen, any lesser production would have made this a Monster of the Week movie, and some of the sequels were. You know, J.J. Abrams did a great TED Talk years ago. Did you see the one about the mystery box?
I haven't seen that one.
He was talking about a scene in Jaws where Brody, the beach is run amok, the shark's killing people, his job is on the line. He's just in a funk, and he sits down at the dinner table, and he folds his hands, rests his head on his hands, and he looks at his son, who does the same thing. So then he moves his hands, kids do the same thing. They play a little mirroring game,
right?
And
it
kind of cheers up Brody for a second. And JJ said, "Listen, after Jaws, everybody wanted the next big monster movie, and they had The Swarm, they had Alligator, they had, you know, all these movies that followed in the wake of Jaws. But JJ said, you're not copying the right part of Jaws. That scene with Brody and his son, that's what you want to be imitating if you make a movie like Jaws, because that's what grounds it, that's what humanizes it, that's what makes you invest in it more than just here's sitting there rooting for people to get killed." So exceptional filmmaking coupled with just, again, a legacy of changing the decisions people make in their lives. I just think it's incredible. And Spielberg, of course, in prime form, iconic shots, amazing dialogue. You know all the lines from the movie. Yeah. We're going to need a bigger boat. Yeah, I mean, it's a legendary film.
You know a movie is good when it creates a phobia, or it really expands a phobia.
Yeah, exactly. I remember that came out, and, I mean, there were lines around the theaters when that thing came out, you know, and it was just freaking amazing. And, you know, to this day, it still stands true to everything. It's such a perfect movie.
It gives me shivers. I can't watch it. I watched it when I was a kid. I cannot watch it anymore.
Now, do you know what they named the shark?
No.
I do.
Yes.
Go ahead, Zach.
Bruce.
And why did they name him Bruce?
Because he wanted to be Batman?
No.
Oh, what the fuck?
That was the name of Spielberg's attorney.
Oh,
all true.
That's funny.
That is funny.
And now when you watch Finding Nemo, the shark in his name is Bruce, which pays homage to Jaws.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And apparently that shark is at an auto repair shop in Sun Valley.
Yes.
Let's go.
Yeah, I got to get up there sometime and see it, but apparently it's just kind of sitting up there.
Sitting there, yeah.
Like, look at it. It's like,
all right,
this is kind of legendary Hollywood.
All right, number one. We got to do a round robin here. What do you think number one is going to be, Steve?
What do you think it's going to be, or what is your personal?
Well, there's a couple I lean to, but I think The Omen was incredible.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that was another good one. Amber?
You're looking at me to go next. Okay.
Amber?
I was still thinking about The Omen. Mm-hmm. Okay, because I grew up right next to a graveyard, so for me, Night of the Living Dead, the original one, messed me up.
Wow.
I still can't watch it. The part where the spine is just moving, that still I have nightmares about that. So that's one of mine.
Zach?
I'm going to say the original Nightmare on Elm Street, the very, very first one that actually had Johnny Depp in it. There's just parts of that. I mean, let's see. I think it came out, Paul, tell me if I'm right. I think it was like 84, 85?
It was early 80s, if not 84, 83.
Okay, so I probably wasn't born yet, but there were so many sequels after that. Growing up as a kid, my mom loved those. So I grew up with freaking Freddy Krueger's laugh, voice, everything. Even if I wasn't in the room, it just freaked me out.
Oh.
Yeah. Intern Christopher, do you have a movie?
No.
No?
No.
Yeah. No.
Pick a cartoon.
That was a good movie.
Don't watch them. Okay, got it. For me, it's a tough one. You know, I kind of go back and forth between Little Women and Little Men.
You're never going to drop this shit,
it's a funny joke.
I know it is.
The horror is that they've made Little Women like four times.
Oh! And that's scary.
Like, have I not seen this already?
That's scary.
The newest one was really good. Come on.
No, for me, God.
Okay, but wait a second. Joe just needs to make the choice to make herself happy. We spend the whole movie watching Joe make the wrong choices with her love life, and that's the real horror.
Like, come
make
on,
yourself
Joe,
happy.
Here.
I can't watch your agony for 2 hours, Joe.
Yeah.
Because that's the facts of life.
Just kiss him. Just kiss him.
Oh my God.
And we're back. Okay. You know, you said one for me as a kid and being brought up Catholic. For me, The Exorcist was it, because it really messed with you. Because I think outside of The Omen too, I think it was one of the few that dealt with religion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and coming into that whole thing of that the devil is real, kind of a thing.
He's watching you.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it is for me. So. Yeah,
it's all kind right. of been like ooh boogity boogity up till then, but then suddenly watching Reagan, the young girl, get torqued and twisted and punished, and the mom just tearing her hair out, and the priest being helpless, and it's all just
and then her soul inside scratches "Help me" on her chest.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
you know, it's just like oh God,
any good exorcism movies?
Yeah,
that's good stuff.
Yeah, all right, Paul, what is it for you, buddy? You're number one.
Well, again, a product of timing, I go with the original Poltergeist.
Oh, yes.
I forgot about that.
No, yeah. I was thinking about that because the pool scene, the muddy pool, that forever messed me up.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Yes. I grew up next to a graveyard. I literally, you can see it from my bedroom window.
Oh, good Lord.
I'm messed up, okay?
In a lot of ways.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, the actual house is in Simi Valley. I went out there and visited it, so... it's this is the first time I think the ghosts came to the suburbs, so that was cool. And plus, again, 1982, I was a wee pup, and I saw that, and both that and Alien sent me into my parents' room, you know, and I was like, is this gonna kind of lie here next to you guys, because there's a monster in the television, you know?
Mom, Dad, quick, put Cheech and Chong on.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And where, like, the 70s horror movies had such low budgets, it helped the creepy factor. Here, I thought the budget and the big effects and everything actually helped deliver the thrills from the tree attack to the creepy clown, all the ghosts, you know, roaming about the house. Still good effects by today's standards. But again, in a story that just takes itself seriously. And that's all I look for. If you have too much goofy fun, you know, like Lost Boys could have been a horror movie, but there's a lot of goofy fun. And so it kind of.
Yeah.
It almost lands itself in a different category. And so it's just like a fun 80s romp almost. Yeah. But this one, I think, plays it pretty straight. Spielberg was red hot, and you can see his thumbprint all over the movie as a producer. In fact,
that's Toby right. Yeah.
Hooper, chainsaw director, is credited, but some people think Spielberg really took the reins on this one. And for me, it works on all levels. I love it.
And it had Zelda Rubinstein in it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Was like,
this house is clean.
Yeah, loads of good actors. Joe Beth Williams, Craig T. Nelson, incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, there's and then that girl, you know, they always say this is the one you've heard about, right? That the set was haunted or cursed or something because so many of the people died making the movie, including that young girl. She died very young, but she was extraordinary in the movie. And that's just a shot of her. They're here, you know, and then the creepy kids singing in the music.
Yeah.
La 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 la. Good luck sleeping. We've talked about that in the movie, guys, all the time. When creepy kids sing in the score, or now they have this trend of taking a song and making it creepy. Like, I think one of the Insidious movies, the background in the trailer was just going, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Like, you made Row, Row, Row Your Boat creepy?
Yeah.
Hey, Take it easy, creepy kids.
Really?
Hey, they even turned the Banana Splits into a freaking horror slasher film. It's like, come on, man. That was a Saturday morning thing for me.
How did I not see that? Yeah, I need to see that.
Oh, God, it's horrible. I caught part of it. It's really bad. It's really bad.
Hey, well, that's the problem.
Yeah. All right. Paul, thank you so much, buddy. As always, we appreciate it, man. And don't forget to check out Paul's own website, themovieguys.net. He's all over that place. And
posting an article today with your recommendations on all the streaming platforms and what's out there in horror, so you can have a good night. If you can't go trick-or-treating, watch something spooky.
And next time we talk to you, Paul, we got to also cover The Mandalorian now.
Oh, yes.
A damn fine season debut trip episode. So, I'm looking forward to more.
All right, buddy. You take care of yourself and stay safe on those trips, buddy.
Rest in peace, Sean Connery.
All righty, buddy. Take care.
Bye. Thanks, Paul.
Guys, I forgot about that one. That's a good
movie. I actually ran across the remake of it. It has Sam Rockwell in it.
Uh-huh.
Horrible. Horrible.
You can't remake
Poltergeist.
No, which is why I'm glad, actually, when they did Jaws 2, you know, what's his name? The actor came
Roy Schreier.
Roy Schreier came back and reprised his role, you know, in that one again. I thought, okay, that makes it a true thing, you know, that there's another shark there. Mm-hmm. You know, but like I said, by the time it got to, you know, the son now facing the shark and Jaws of Revenge, like I said, hey, you know, plane got to the Bahamas, but the shark got there first. So make your travel arrangements, folks. That's all I'm saying.
Strap on, baby.
Contact your local aquarium, you know. And
do they have great whites at aquariums? Do they do
No, they
that?
Don't, actually.
I didn't think they do.
No, they don't.
No.
But they'll know, they got connections, though.
They eat all the dolphins.
They got connections.
They eat them all.
They got connections. Well, it is Halloween, of course, and we want to do some Halloween tweets for you guys.
Halloween tweets! Tweets. Twitters.
Twix, right or left?
I feel like Trump ruined Twitter, but anyways, let's go with this.
Okay. All right. I'll go first here.
Gage.
Halloween is coming up, and I still have no idea what I'm going to be for the rest of my life.
Oh, I feel that. I felt that. That had a little pang. You want to go, Steve?
Daddy, why do we celebrate Halloween? Don't say worshiping Satan. Don't say worshiping Satan. Well, son, it's for worshiping Satan.
That's funny. One out of every five people you see dressed up at their Halloween party is just me changing my costume every 6 minutes. That's a COVID Halloween party right there.
There you go. Halloween is my favorite holiday where you can trespass on a stranger's property and make a non-negotiable demand.
Yes! I always love that part.
Yeah.
Now, skeletons are a weird costume because you already got one of those in your body. So you're pretty much a bone Oreo with skin frosting, dude.
Dude.
I'm going to have to show that to JP. That's a good one. Idea for a haunted house. Dimly lit grocery store sprinkled with people you haven't talked to since high school.
Actually, that wouldn't be so bad for me because my high school classmates were all tight. So we always talk to each other. All right. Couples' Halloween costumes always end up looking like one person went along with it just to save their relationship.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I always wanted to be in a, like, a, with a girlfriend in a horse costume and I'd be in the bag.
Oh, my. Okay.
Well, you are an ass.
Yeah. Halloween is the only time I can wear a wedding dress and not look desperate.
Oh, that's great.
That's good.
I like that I didn't get that one. Go to a costume shop, hang out by the wall of president masks, and ask an associate which one shows up blurriest on a blank surveillance tape.
What on a blank.
I know that's from a Point Break, right?
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to do anything for Halloween, so I guess I'm going to go as the government.
Oh!
Oh, yeah.
That's...
truthful.
That's good.
That's good, yeah.
That was good.
Yeah, there you go, guys. I'm Halloween.
That was a big old hand on there.
All right.
Denied.
Bad news, man. Bad news.
Yep.
No bad news. No bad news.
Nope. We gotta.
So okay.
My namesake.
Really?
Yes, that's what I got named after.
Your mom did that?
Yep. And if I was a girl, I would have been Angela.
Oh, I thought you were saying Amber. I was like, oh, no. That's cute.
No, it's not. Because my dad had to think for Angie Dickinson.
Oh, Angela.
So, but funny. The great Sean Connery, Hollywood's original James Bond, passed away this morning at the age of 90. Connery, of course, rose from poverty to knighthood as the original and arguably ultimate big screen James Bond. The actor's son told the BBC that he died in his sleep in Nassau, and he was unwell for some time, according to his son. The actor had many of his family who could be in the Bahamas around him. What a place to die, the Bahamas.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's cool.
The Scottish-born actor starred in 7 films as Arthur Ian Fleming's lethal Secret Service agent, codenamed 007, beginning with 1962's Dr. No. Connery won the Best Supporting Actor as Kevin Costner's crime-fighting mentor in Brian De Palma's 1987 Chicago gangland drama, The Untouchables, a critical embrace that had long eluded the actor. Post-Bond, Connery built his iconic status in such action-packed box office hits as Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade, The Hunt for Red October, The Rock. But Connery also dabbled with smaller dramas and character studies while working with legendary filmmakers as Alfred Hitchcock in Marine, John Huston's The Man Who Would Be King, and Sidney Lumet with Murder on the Orient Express. In all, Connery's Hollywood screen career spanned more than 40 years. The ran began 1959 Disney film Darby O'Gill and Little People and ended with the critically dismissed 2003 release The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. His final credit was in 2012, directed to video animated film called Sir Billy, for which he voiced the main character. He was born Thomas Sean Connery. Wow, he went by his middle name too.
Yeah.
On August 25th, 1930, the Scotsman did time in Britain's Royal Navy and found success as a bodybuilder prior to breaking into acting on the stage and live TV. He was 32 when Dr. No brought him instant international fame. Though he and the character obviously clicked, Connery would say his hard scrabble upbringing made him an unconventional pick for the suave agent. Quote, I don't think Ian Fleming had me in mind for Agent 007, Connery said in 1983. But Fleming came around and soon couldn't picture anyone else but Connery as Bond. Moviegoers could relate. He was knighted by Queen Elizabeth II in 2000. Connery earned a lifetime achievement honors from the American Film Institute in 2005, the Hollywood Foreign Press in 1996, and BAFTA in 1998, among others. He was married twice. His second marriage lasted more than 40 years until his death. Survivors include his wife, Micheline, and the Connery son from his first marriage, and actor Jason, the actor Jason Connery. By the end, Connery had mellowed with his stance on his once all cosmic alter ego. Quote, well, once you're much more resigned to it, he once said of Bond, it's much easier to deal with. So, definitely, we are going to miss this man. He's done just so many great films, big and small. It doesn't matter. He commanded every performance he did. It's just amazing to always watch him. We pulled up something here from when he won the Academy Award for The Untouchables, Best Supporting Actor from 1988. Here we go.
You know, we're here to present the award for the best performance by an actor in a supporting role.
And the nominees are Albert Brooks in Broadcast News.
Morgan Freeman, Street Smart.
Sean Connery in The Untouchables.
Wow, look at that crowd. That was a great one.
Thank you.
Denzel Washington in Cry Freedom.
Vincent Gardenia in Moonstruck.
And the winner is...
Sean Connery in The
Good evening. Ladies and gentlemen, friends, and a few enemies. I don't think there's anyone aware, or unaware rather, in Hollywood or the rest of the world tonight that this is the 60th anniversary of these Academy Awards. And I just realized myself the other day that my first one and only attendance was 30 years ago. Patience truly is a virtue. But it, in winning this award, it creates a certain dilemma because I had decided, if I'd had the good fortune to win, that I would give it to my wife, who deserves it. But this evening I discovered backstage that they're worth $15,000 and... Now I'm not so sure. Sherry, I'm only kidding. It's yours. But if such a thing as a wish accompanied this award, mine would be that we ended the writer's strike. And I thank you all sincerely.
And of course, here is Andy Garcia talking about working with the great Sean Connery.
Andy Garcia.
I've been living my entire life, Sean, with people saying, what was it like to work with Sean Connery? What was it like to work with Sean Connery? So tonight I'm going to share a couple anecdotes of what it was like to work with Sean Connery. One of the first scenes we did was a scene where Elliot Ness, played by Kevin Costner, was going to take this enthusiastic plea from Charlie's Martin Smith about that we can nail Al Capone through because of tax evasion. So we got to the set, and before we got dressed, we were doing a rehearsal, and Sean was in dressed in his golf clothes with, you know, a pair of red polyester golf pants. And we go through the rehearsal, you know, kind of talked about the scene a little bit, not really too much, but Brian says, well, Sean, what would you like to do in the scene? He says, well, I'm going to read the newspaper. I'll sit in the corner and read the newspaper. And I said to myself, oh, God, that's what I was going to do. And Brian turned to Sean. He says, okay, Sean, you're dismissed. And he walked off the set, came back at 4 o'clock in the afternoon after a five-hour golf game. They sat him down in the corner, and they did a close-up and a master. He got up. He says, oh, now it's time to get, you want to really know how to get Capone? It's not time to get Capone. And he walked out, and he worked for like 5 minutes after 18 holes of golf. And me and Charlie grabbed him after the scene and said, that was very clever of you. You know, the fact that you came in, you were already dressed for golf, you sat in the, you didn't even play the scene until the end of the day. You came in, you said one line, you walked up, they get a big close-up of you, the scene was over, and he said, it's not my first barbecue.
Oh, so good, so good. Well, we're definitely going to miss him. just such a, again,
I'm
a great,
taking notes right now.
A great actor, yeah. Steve, I think you got some things from,
yes,
from Twitter.
I've got some tweets. First of all, I have to say that there's always that question in movies, where were you in 62? I was 12 years old, and my brother took me to the drive-in to see this movie that's a new spy drama-type movie and stuff, and it changed my life. It was Dr. No with Sean Connery, and I couldn't believe this man that was on the screen. He held such a presence, and he was so just confident and so good, and it really, my life was always different after that, and miss him terribly. Sir Roger Moore tweeted, "How infinitely sad to hear the news Sir Sean Connery has passed away. He and Roger were friends for many decades, and Roger always maintained Sean was the best ever James Bond. Rest in peace." Hugh Jackman said, "I grew up idolizing Sean Connery, a legend on screen and off. Rest in peace." Sam Neill, "Every day on set with Sean Connery was an object lesson in how to act on screen, but all that charisma and power, that was utterly unique to Sean. Rest in peace, that great man, that great actor." And George Takei. George Takei. "Sean Connery was a movie legend. Even far into his golden years, our strongest bonds were formed by him, and he was untouchable. He passed away at age 90, a suave hero to the end."
Yeah. Aww. Very cool. Very cool. Definitely look him up, guys. I mean, yeah, we all, you know certain things of him, you know, being the father of Indiana Jones or leading Nick Nolte and The Rock, you know, into Alcatraz, but he played King Arthur. Just so many good movies. Just, you know, look him up on IMDb and just look at all the wonderful movies that he did.
At least watch The Rock. It's the best Michael Bay movie.
Yeah.
Before all the Transformer stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
That was cool. Indiana Jones is lying about, "We named the dog Indiana."
I like that dog. Yeah. "We're named a dog, Indiana.
Don't forget, Junior."
Yeah. "Stop calling me that, please."
Ah, classic.
Yeah. I'm going to cry.
Don't cry.
All right. Well, I wanted to ask you guys this question here. Would you buy one of these haunted houses?
Possibly.
The first one, Silence of the Lambs home is for sale right now.
Nope. What?
The Silence of the Lambs home.
Nope.
The one they filmed it in?
Yeah.
Nope, not a chance.
It's situated on almost 2 acres and measuring 2,400 square feet with 4 bedrooms, 1 bath. It has a beautiful craftsmanship throughout the home. It also boasts an in-ground pool, which we already know about because of the well, and a vintage caboose used as a pool house. Guess how much they're asking for it?
$2 million.
With only 1 bathroom?
Where is it located again?
Doesn't say exactly where it's located, though.
I'm Googling.
It's actually very affordable, guys.
I'm going to say $80,000.
A little bit more affordable than that. Hmm. Actually, more expensive. It's actually just under $300,000.
Oh, jeez, that was way off.
Bargain!
$298,500 is the asking price for it. All right, Lizzie Borden's house for sale.
Wait,
This is the River Fall, Massachusetts home where she moved after her parents' deaths and stayed until her death in 1927.
Oh, that's right, okay.
It's where she lived after being acquitted for the brutal axe murders of her father and stepmother. It's almost 4,000 square feet with 7 bedrooms, 4 baths. It's being sold fully furnished in period furniture appropriate for the time of Lizzie's ownership. The price, $890,000.
Wow.
Okay, for those of you guys here in L.A., the Black Dahlia Murder House.
Oh, yeah, this is...
Los Angeles Dr. George Hodel and his involvement in the brutal killing, mutilated, and dismembered Elizabeth Short in the Black Dahlia Murder. The house is crafted by Lord White and had a $2 million renovation that brought it back to its original splendor. It was recently on the market for $4.7 million.
Hmm.
All right.
No, that one's way haunted. That one's wicked haunted.
The Gardet Le Pretre Haunted Mansion. It's known at the Sultan as the Sultan's House. The home is hosted a cream of New Orleans society for the beginning of its rich history. The story is that one morning, as neighbors were walking by the Sultan House, they saw blood trickling from under the front door. They discovered that all the inhabitants had been murdered with swords or axes, and the Sultan was found brutalized and buried alive in the backyard. It was always felt that the murderers were executed by his brother, the real Sultan, as retribution for his theft of his fortune and many of his wives. A French quarter-style home as a block from Bourbon Street with 9 bedrooms.
Okay.
10 baths. Recently on the market, $2.65 million.
Hey, that's a bed and breakfast right there. You can sign me up.
There you go.
I'll buy it.
Okay. Now, I think Steve and I might go halves in on this one.
Oh.
A Colorado ghost town.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, yeah.
How about owning a ghost town? The railroad. 40s. The railroad brought many tourists through La Viette Pass to Uptop. It was a favorite stop for miners, railroad men, and lumberjacks. Unfortunately, the railroad left in the early 1900s. In the 1960s, the new highway system bypassed Uptop, making it a ghost town that was recently restored by two sisters. In 2014, the entire town was for sale for $2 million. It includes a train depot, dance hall, a saloon, and a chapel.
Let's do it.
Dude, that's like Knott's Berry Farm all over again.
Let's
for
do
us.
It.
That's,
like,
that's a no-brainer there.
Yeah.
We
got to play the lottery and totally. Buy this town.
Totally.
Yeah.
What's the price again? That. The price was?
$2
million. Done. Let's go do that.
I know. It's like, you know, we create Knott's Berry Farm all over again in Colorado. In Colorado.
Done. Let's go.
Dude, I got my guns already. I got my costumes. I got my new gun belts and everything. I get to play cowboy again.
Let's make our own Westworld.
I got my cowboy hat.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, here we go. The Arizona Boulder People. A Stonehenge-type phenomenon occurs on both spring and fall equinoxes. A 6-inch wide beam of light that starts in the glass between two boulders and slowly works its way across the floor and up the wall to a 36-inch spiral petroglyph. When the sun hits its mark, the stone projects light upon... When the sun hits its mark... The stone projections light up like diamonds. It's a freak of nature. Does this mean anything? Well, it's believed to have started over 1,000 years ago when the Boulder people first started living there, and the Boulder house sits on 9 acres at 4,300 square feet, 3 bedrooms, good Lord, 2 baths, and a great room with massive fireplace that recently sold for $4.2 million. I still buy the town. I don't care. You get more.
The town first.
Yeah. Okay. Thousand Island Haunted Mansion. When the home was built in 1895 for Carlton Manor, the president of Remington Arms and Typewriter Company, it became the grandest structure in all of New York. It sits on an island of 6.9 acres and is surrounded by almost 1,000 feet of waterfront. Today, it's a mere shell in need of lots of TLC, selling for $495,000 to a buyer who's willing to make this piece of history into a grand restoration project. I would buy that one, too.
That sounds cool. Shut up and take my money.
Exactly. Haunted Magnolia Mansion. The Magnolia Mansion multiple ghosts are allegedly friendly with a sense of humor. Oh, good. One of them's named Casper.
Wow.
There are reports of a ghostly mate who will tuck you in at night.
Mate or maid?
Maid.
Okay.
Yeah, that's dying. I wonder if she's French. Oui, oui. She'll tuck you in at night, and then there's a child who walks the halls and a bearded man who spends his time downstairs.
Ew.
A Greek revival mansion boasts over 13,000 square feet and 13 bedrooms. It was most recently up for sale at $3.2 million.
All righty, then.
The Amityville Horror House.
No.
I like that one. I would buy that one.
I'll go to it, but I'm not going to live there.
All right. So we all know the whole story behind Amityville. The thing. Okay. The home was occupied by years later by the Lutz family, who were forced to leave because of a rampant paranormal activity. Its 5,000 square feet Ocean Avenue waterfront home was remodeled in 2016 and sold for $605,000 in 2017. So, not bad for you know, for what it is.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. The world's biggest ghost house. The A.B.
What?
The A.B. Winchester. No, no.
Oh, not?
No, no. Oh. Windener family, W-I-D-E-N-E-R. Windener, Windener family, built a 110-room Lynette Wood Hall in Pennsylvania. When the family invested with J.P. Morgan in the White Star Line, little did he know that his son and grandson would die on the maiden voyage of its flagship, the Titanic. Windener died in his grand mansion 3 years after the sinking consumed with guilt and grief. This would, the world with the Windener ghosts are still its caretakers, and its legacy continues to be the world's biggest abandoned ghost house. Lynwood Hall was listed at $20 million in 2014. Luckily for those of all of us, it dropped down to $16.5 million.
Oh, well, yeah.
Just 5 years ago. So, but can you imagine 110 rooms? That's like Wayne Manor.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
You know?
I want to check it out.
So, but I want to go to Colorado and buy that ghost town, though.
Yeah.
I totally
We're all
would.
In on that.
Yeah, totally would do on that.
I think I would buy the Winchester house. I think that's cool. I've been there.
Oh, yeah, so have I. Stuff. I want to take Roman up there, too.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, and so's Hertz Castle, too. Oh, my God, some of the stuff that they've got up there and everything. So, all right, guys, we're trying to do this real quick for you, too. Top Halloween songs.
Yay! This is happier.
All right, so number 10. We're going to run down these real quick. Number 10 is what we just played, Halloween, the theme song by John Carpenter. And this is done by Billboard Magazine, too. So number 9 was Don't Fear the Reaper by Blue Oyster Cult. Number 8, Werewolves of London by Warren Zevon. Great Warren Zevon.
Mm-hmm.
Number 7, Somebody's Watching Me by Rockwell. Great tune. Mm-hmm. We were just talking about this gentleman earlier. This is Halloween by Danny Elfman.
This is Halloween.
Yeah.
Halloween.
All right. Halloween. What do you guys
think? Halloween.
All right, real quick, what songs do you guys think are in the top 5?
Yes.
Thriller.
That is number 1.
Woo! I'll just do it. Hang on. I was going to do the Vince Price part.
All right, while we're listening to this, what do you guys think is number 2?
Monster Mash.
Yeah.
That little
Monster Mash is number 3.
Oh, right there.
That is so classic. Hey, drumming.
Yeah.
It'd be hilarious if you guys actually got the last three.
All right. Number... Okay, what do you think is next? We got Thriller, Monster Mash, number 3.
I keep hoping it's like the Time Warp or like Sweet Transvestite from Rocky. This is my favorite.
No.
I can't.
Don't know?
I know, me too.
Number 5 is The Monster by Eminem.
Get out.
Featuring Rihanna.
Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me. Stop holding your breath.
And you think I'm crazy. Yeah, you think I'm crazy. All right. I wanted the fame, but not the cover. Number 4. I'm surprised you guys didn't get this one because everybody watches this movie every year and its sequel and sometimes the remake, and there's a new movie coming out for it. Ghostbusters.
Who
are you going to call?
Your mom.
My mom.
I'll give you her number. She'll be happy to hear from you.
Did you guys ever see the Casper movie that came out in the 90s?
Yeah, love it.
There's that part when Dan Aykroyd runs out of the ghost house and he goes, who are you going to call? Somebody else.
Somebody else, yeah. That was a great cameo. All right, number 2, more of more modern group here. Actually, my son Roman kind of digs this band a little bit. I don't know if intern Christopher does, though. But the song is Demons by Imagine Dragons.
And the days are cold and the cards all fold, and the saints we see are all made of gold. When you dream.
The Halloween song?
Hey, this is by Billboard Magazine, by Billboard.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, so these are the top Halloween songs by Billboard.
Interesting.
So, once again, number 10 was Halloween theme song, Don't Fear the Reaper, Werewolves of London, Somebody's Watching Me, This is Halloween, The Monster by Eminem, Ghostbusters theme, Ray Parker Jr., Monster Mash, Demons, Magic Dragons, and, of course, number one is Thriller by Michael Jackson. Now, for those of you guys who have not heard this, this is really amazing. We're going to play for you Vincent Price's talk of the end of Thriller.
I was going to do it for you.
And well, the very beginning, though, you're going to hear him and Michael do a little bit of a promo.
Okay.
Kind of a thing. So let's play that real quick.
Okay, tape rolling. Anytime you want.
Hi, this is Michael Jackson.
Oh, God.
This is Vincent Price. Michael Jackson is...
the Thriller.
Oh,
can you both say it?
Say it together. I say inviting you to. All right. Yeah.
Turn it up, please.
Okay.
Anytime, test roll.
Hi, this is Michael Jackson.
And this is Vincent Price inviting you to
The Thriller.
Darkness falls across the land. The midnight hour is close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize y'all's neighborhood. And whosoever shall be found without the soul for getting down must stand and face the hounds of hell and rot inside a corpse's shell. The demons squeal in sheer delight. It's you they spy, so plump, so right. For though the groove is hard to beat, yet still you stand with frozen feet. You try to run, you try to scream, but no more sun you'll ever see. For evil reaches from the crypt to crush you in its icy grip. The foulest stench is in the air, the funk of 40,000 years, and grisly ghouls from every tomb are closing in to seal your doom. And though you fight to stay alive, your body starts to shiver, for no mere mortal can resist the evil of the Thriller. Can you dig it?
Oh, that's so good.
I love that.
I've never heard the full extended version.
Oh. That's it right there.
I've never.
That's a whole poem.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My.
Now, bit of trivia real quick.
Okay.
The guy who co-wrote the Thriller with Michael Jackson, they went to go pick up Vincent Price. They're on their way to from Price's house to the studio, and he's writing down exactly what Vincent was going to say on the way to the studio. They had no idea.
He wrote it right then.
Right then and there, on the way to the studio. Then Michael offered Vincent, look, we can pay you for this. You're going to get paid for this. But we were wondering, would you like the money we're going to offer, or would you like to get points on the album instead? So they knew it was going to be pretty big or whatever. You know, Quincy and Michael kind of knew it was going to be pretty good. And Vincent asked, well, how much? He goes, well, we're going to give you about $50,000, but again, if you want points. He goes, no, I'll take the
$50,000. Oh, True story. He would have made
a lot more with the points.
Vincent.
But I think about that, and he had a lot.
he mean, was rich.
He, to me, some of the greatest Halloween or horror type movies was Vincent Price with was it Mask of the Red Death and Premature Burial, and one of my favorite scary movies of all time, I didn't mention this early, was The Pit and the Pendulum.
Oh my gosh.
One of the most horrific, well done old movies you'll ever see.
Oh, I love that one.
He's incredible. I remember seeing it in the theater and just going, watching as the pendulum swung from, you know, you had to move your head. It was beautiful. It was beautiful.
Ancient medieval torture is just something special.
It is.
The pendulum is just, that's just dark. Just cutting you.
Watching it.
The Iron Maiden.
Sort of.
But still, the pendulum swinging. Yeah, slowly.
It sort of does your shirt.
Listen to you two.
It does your shirt and skin, and it keeps going slowly.
I think this is foreplay for
him
right now.
That messed me up.
I loved that. I was so scared. I don't know how old I was, but it was amazing.
You know, something that I love, though?
What?
It's something that happened this past Thursday.
What happened?
Well, our good friends.
What are you talking about? I have no clue.
Mark Thompson and Brian Phelps were finally inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame.
Hello.
Thank God for Laura Stringer for putting
the whole reason we're here.
Yeah, exactly.
The reason we are here with you guys.
Exactly. Laura did a beautiful job. She worked 2 years on getting them in. We didn't do it last year. We did it this year. It was just amazing. So proud of them. So happy for them. And eventually, later on, we're going to get them both on the show together also to discuss it and everything. So we're going to end the show with this right now. And so for those of you who missed it on Thursday, I was able to edit down their induction into the Radio Hall of Fame. And let's take it away with this. Here we go. Martin.
So our next inductees came together in Birmingham, Alabama. One was a disc jockey. The other was a comedian. The result, 27 years of laughter, rating success, and large audiences for a quarter of a century in Los Angeles. Mark and Brian took Southern California by storm in 1987 and kept everyone laughing for 25 years. And when I say everyone, I mean everyone. Gene Simmons of Kiss, actor William Shatner, talk show host Jay Leno, and millions of listeners stuck on all those congested freeways driving to work every morning. The good news was they had Mark and Brian to keep them company every day. Joining us for a proper introduction, a television entertainer and musician that needs no introduction, Donny Osmond.
You know, I always looked at Mark and Brian as the Donnie and Marie of radio. And I always thought Mark was the Donnie, and, well, you know where that leaves Brian. It was back in Alabama where they first started this dynamic duo. And then they moved to Los Angeles to KLOS, and the ratings success of Mark and Brian was unbelievable. And in my opinion, one of the reasons why their show was so successful was because they did what they wanted to do. They just had fun. They broke the rules, and they always got away with it. I recall the first time I went on the air with them. KLOS, by the way, as you know, was a rock and roll format. Definitely not the station to tune into to hear Donny Osmond's music of that era. Well, you know, they may have played One Bad Apple at Crazy Horses, but I really doubt they played Puppy Love unless they played it to make fun of it. And I walk into the station, and they had this keyboard there in the studio. We went live on the air. The first thing they did, they turned to me and said, "Donny, sing us a little Puppy Love." And I thought, okay. So I played and I sang Puppy Love. We all laughed our heads off. We had such a great time. And I loved it because the show had no demographic barriers. These guys were so much fun to talk to. They didn't take themselves seriously. I didn't take myself seriously. I loved the show because we could just be ourselves. And Mark and Brian, I got to tell you, they're out of their minds. They would do crazy things. For instance, I was training to try to win the Long Beach Grand Prix, and the guys came out to do a live remote at the Willow Springs International Raceway. That's where I was practicing. And I think it was Brian that did. No, you know what? I know it was Brian because Mark's got a couple more brain cells than Brian. At least that's what Mark tells me. Anyway, we hop into our respective race cars, and all three of us are racing around the track as fast as we can when Brian decides to turn his car around and go the wrong way down the track. And I thought this was hilarious. So I turn my car around, and both Brian and I headed right towards Mark. I'm sure they had a huge mess to clean up on Mark's seat after we were done. In fact, all three of us were kicked off the track immediately. We had so much fun, and this was so typical of Mark and Brian. You know, time and time again, people would come up to me and say, "We love hearing you on Mark and Brian." It was the cool radio show to be on, and I thank them for having me on so many times. So, we're about to induct these two crazy friends of mine into the Radio Hall of Fame. I am so honored to have been chosen to be the one to do this. I mean, I love these guys like my brothers. It's just amazing how much they remind me of Tito and Jermaine. So, without further ado, Mark and Brian's 20-plus years of broadcasting greatness is being recognized tonight, and it is certainly deserved. Mark and Brian, it is my honor to officially induct you into the Radio Hall of Fame. Congratulations, my friends.
Mark and Brian, let's do this in order of your names. Mark Thompson and Brian Phelps, it's my honor to welcome you both this evening as we induct your program into the Radio Hall of Fame in 2020. Congratulations, Mark.
Thank you, Elvis. Thank you, Donnie. That was touching. So I'll do this as quickly as I can. I know we're limited on time. Radio has been one of the most important things in my entire life. It was my first genuine, true love. I was born and raised in a small northern Alabama town called Muscle Shoals. And we had two top 40 radio stations there, WOWL and WLAY. They both played the same songs, the same commercials, the same promotions. The only thing that differentiated the two was the jock staffs. WLAY billed theirs as the good guys, which for a 10-year-old kid couldn't have been more boring. The guys on WOWL were hellions. They would pop in on each other's show. They would party on the weekend together. Christopher J. Ballou, the afternoon guy, was my absolute favorite, a wild man. He got a little too drunk on one of those weekends. He mixed up concrete and he dumped it in the program director's trunk. He was suspended, but not before he told the story. And I wanted to meet him. And he wasn't, the radio station wasn't that far. So I rode my bike to WOWL and I'd go into the lobby because I wanted to try to meet him. And I would hang out as long as they would let me until they would kick me out. And I didn't meet him there, but I saw his picture. On the wall of the lobby were all of the pictures of the jocks, the 8x10 black and whites, and there in the middle was Christopher J. Ballou. So I knew what he looked like. And then they started promoting that Christopher was going to broadcast live from a shopping center near my house. So again, I rode my bike down, massive crowd, and there he is. There's Christopher J. Ballou. And this was when they would take the entire console. That's how old it was. They would bring the turntables and the mic and the mixer, and they would do the show from right there. And I kind of lost my mind. I'm 10. I walked up to him, and he turned. He saw me. He smiled, and he said to me, "Don't bump the record, kid." Now, this is my idol, and I was still honored by those words. Little did I know, how could I have known, that 6 short years later, I would become a jock at WOWL, and I would work alongside Christopher J. Ballou. And what an ass that, no, I'm kidding. To work there was a dream come true. And shortly after I had gotten that job, I walked into the lobby, the very same lobby they used to kick me out of. And I looked, and there on the wall was my 8x10 black and white next to Christopher J. Ballou. And I thought, I thought that would be the greatest moment of my career, my life. And it isn't. It's this. You voting members, you're radio people. your general managers and your programmers and your air personalities, and you are my peers, and you have put me in the room with the greatest of all time in the number one thing I have loved my entire life. I could never thank you for that incredible honor. To my wife, Linda, of 38 years, we met on a blind date when I was in Savannah, my first morning show. I told my buddy, look, I don't do blind dates. I'm in radio. And he said, no, listen, she's a listener. She loves the show. You got to do it. So I did. Obviously, we were married 20 years into the marriage. She confesses to me that the old beat up Le Mans car she drove when we were dating didn't get FM. She only got AM. She was forced to listen to me. The entire marriage was a sham. My kids, Matthew, Amy, Katie, did nothing to get me into the Hall of Fame except spend my money. The only other thing that they did do is that they're proud of their father. To the listeners, you gave Brian and I a reason to do the stupid crap we did. Without you, there was nothing. To Mark St. John, Randy Lane, the two men that suggested we are put together, thank you. Laura Stringer worked with us many, many years. She saw something deep in the crap we were doing. She worked tirelessly 2 years to get us here. Laura, this honor is right up alongside you. Thank you. I love you, and you know that. Bill Summers, the general manager of 95.5 KLOS, my lifelong dream was to go into major market. He made that happen. I told him that he brought my dream to me. He always told me, don't ever forget where you came from, and I didn't, Bill. And I'm glad this is happening now. Bill is really, really old, and he'll probably be dead in about a week. So thank you, Billy. My mother, first love, just the kind of love that you can't explain. She once told me that she felt as though I had been put on this earth for a special reason. And I believed her. She would have been so proud. If she were here, she would have gone to the hair salon and got her hair poofed up, put on her red party dress, and made this celebration her bitch. I can promise you that. Thank you, Mom. I love you. This next gentleman I want to introduce you to, I would not be here if it weren't for him. 27 years we were together. This man came in as a improvisational comedian, and out of the many, many things that he could do, I can tell you because I witnessed it. When he did a character, we always had a script and he would follow it sometimes. But when he was feeling it, he would go off into this thing. And I'm telling you, I've never heard anybody do what he was capable of doing, is capable. I wouldn't be here without him. It is a man that I truly love, respect, and honor. And it is my proud moment to welcome you to my partner of 27 years, Mr. Brian Phelps.
Wow. Thanks, Mark. Okay. Let me dive right in here and say congratulations to all this year's deserving inductees. And to Craig and the Radio Hall of Fame Committee, thank you for this amazing honor. And guys, I'm not exactly sure how this works. Do I Venmo you or did you want cash? You know what? We can talk about that later. Donnie, thank you so much. You've been a buddy since we started at KLOS. If time allowed, I'd share with all of you the story of Donnie's first visit on the show. But I can tell you it deals with my first earthquake experience, the fact that Donnie was between me and the studio door and my footprints running up Donnie's back because he just wasn't moving fast enough. To the great Peter Stacker. Peter, thank you for taking me under your wing in Chicago and then drastically overselling me to Bernie Barker, Randy Lane, and Mark St. John, WAPI in Birmingham, Alabama, where I'd meet a guy who'd be my partner for the next 27 years. Mm-hmm. Birmingham was our first home, and it was amazing. But after 18 months, it came time to move on, and we decided on Atlanta. So there we sat in the GM's office, literally reaching for the pen to sign our shiny new contract
when his assistant comes in and says our lawyer's on the phone and needed to speak with us. We go out to her desk, we pick up the phone, and sure enough, it's Don Ephraim, who said, guys, don't sign anything. L.A. just called. So thank you, Bill Summers, for taking a huge risk and making us a couple of no-name top 40 loving goobers the new morning show of your iconic classic rock station 95.5 KLOS. Bill, I am eternally grateful, and I've often wondered, what the hell were you thinking? Now, because of time constraints, I'm unable to mention all the program directors we had over the years at KLOS, mainly because there were 837 of them. But let me just say, some of you were good. But I truly, it truly is a daunting task to try to thank every single person that had an impact on our show. But allow me to at least make an attempt here. Oh, and ironically, I got this idea while listening to a radio commercial. So, I'd like to thank
Steve Smith, Anza Rusi, Neil Kane Bitten, Roxanne Riccio, George Quarterman, Elizabeth McDonald, Rosemary Manage, Randy Lane, Bob Coombs, Bob Buck, and Bob Moore, Carly Wright, Pamela Holt, Jill Whelan, Elliot and Dave Ephraim, Danny Mizrahi, Chris in the Fall, Bill Hunting, Robert Lucky Buck Duggins, Tito Anthony, Nicole Sandler, Glenn Noyes, Dave Shute, Brian Lopez, Paul and Annie, the Moyertis, and Guillermo Marconi.
And I'm so grateful to have worked with such talented and generous people, on-air family members like Chuck Moshantz, Arlo Holtz, my big brother Frank Sontag, Todd Donahoe, Ted Lekas, my work wife, Priva Lola, my friend and writing partner for over 15 years, Eric Lola, Franny Spitzer, Scott Reif, Stu Kelly, Mike Sherry, and of course, rock legend Rita Wild, who absolutely, positively deserves to be in the Radio Hall of Fame. To Switchboard Alora, Laura Stringer, look what you did. Thank you for all your tireless work over the last couple of years that got us here tonight. You are a gift. To Mark, there's not a doubt in my mind that whether I'm in the equation or not, you'd make it into the Radio Hall of Fame. Well-deserved, partner. And to the listeners, we simply wouldn't be here tonight if not for you. Thank you for your love, for your dedication, for allowing us to be a small part of your lives and being such a huge part of ours. This is for you. Thank you, and be good humans.
Thank you for listening to this week's show. Don't forget to support the show by shopping on Amazon. Just go to our website, yourweeklydose.com, click on the Amazon banner, and bookmark. Then start shopping. Remember to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1 and Facebook at yourweeklydose. We'll see you next week.